This message is a presentation of Pinnacle Baptist Church and the preaching ministry of Pastor Ray McBerry. Other messages like this are available online at pinnaclebaptist.com. The church is located at 2517 High Falls Road in Griffin, Georgia. If you're in the area, we would love for you to visit us this Sunday. Now, here's today's message.
Well, if you'll join me now in the book of Genesis, chapter number 30, we are in the life of Jacob now. We've gone through the patriarchs, first with Abraham and then with Isaac. Now we're in the life of Jacob, and we are with Jacob in the land of Haran, which is in Syria. This is where his uncle Laban lives, along with Laban's two daughters, Leah and Rachel. And we saw in chapter 29 that as soon as Jacob showed up there, he set eyes on one of Laban's daughters, his younger daughter, Rachel, immediately fell in love with her at first sight, and spent the next 7 years working for Uncle Laban for the privilege of marrying Rachel, only to find out that the next morning after the wedding night that the daughter Laban had sent into the tent on the wedding night was Leah, the elder daughter. And so he woke up to discover he had married the elder daughter, not the one he was wanting to marry. So he worked out a deal with Uncle Laban to work for him for another 7 years if Laban would give him Rachel to be his wife also. So Jacob has two wives now, and he has promised to stay an extra 7 years to work off the debt, the dowry, if you would, to Uncle Laban in exchange for his daughter Rachel as well. So he had two wives, Leah and Rachel. At the end of chapter 29, the Bible tells us that Jacob loved Rachel more than Leah. She was his favorite. And in God's divine providence, in God's wisdom, God closed the womb of Rachel and did not allow her to have any children. But he did open the womb of Leah. Leah did not have Jacob's love, but she had God's favor in bearing children. And these four names that I have written on the whiteboard up here are the four sons that Leah bare to Jacob at the end of chapter 29. We talked about the meanings of their names and all of that last week. We won't have time to go back over that tonight because we have so much new material to cover, but all of our chapter studies from the book of Genesis are on the church website at pinnaclebaptist.com. You can go up to the, click on the link that says Listen Now and choose studies in the books of the Bible and choose the book of Genesis and listen to any of the chapters that you've missed or you want to go back and listen to again. They're all there. So I encourage you to do that if you might have missed one along the way. But that brings us to the end of chapter 29 now. So Jacob now has four sons. You know, a pregnancy lasts about 9 months. And so the time it would take to have four sons has to be, it has to account for about 4 years out of that extra seven years Jacob agreed to stay on and work for Uncle Laban. So we're through about four of those 7 years at the end of chapter 29. All right, so now we begin chapter 30, verse 1. And when Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said unto Jacob, give me children or else I die. Now, a couple of things about Rachel here. First of all, we know she's the one that Jacob loved the most. And so she had Jacob's love, but she couldn't have children. And she felt envious, even though she had her husband's love more than her sister, she had not been able to bear any children. So envy is one of those things that it can cause people to do and say things that they wouldn't ordinarily say and do. Here, instead of just appreciating the fact that her husband loved her more than her sister, she's envious of what she doesn't have, and that is, of course, children. We understand the significance of having children, especially sons, both now and in that day. But she envied her sister, and she said unto Jacob, give me children, or else I die. It's kind of interesting. She's talking to Jacob and she's telling him, listen, give me children or I'm going to grieve myself to death. I'm going to worry myself to death. You have to put yourself for a moment in Jacob's situation. Here's his wife telling him, listen, give me children or I'm going to worry myself to death. That would be an awkward and a difficult situation to be in if you were Jacob. I can just see Jacob now throwing up his hands in the air. What am I supposed to do? Look what he says there in verse 2. And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, am I in God's stead, who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb? He said, listen, am I God that I can make you have children? That's not within my ability to do. Why are you getting upset with me about it? And I think he was rightfully so in saying, you know, how can you get upset with me about something I don't have any control over? As a husband, I'm sure he did plenty of things that he did need to get in trouble for that were his fault, but this was not one of them. This was something he had no control over. Verse 3, and she said, behold, my maid Bilhah, go in unto her, and she shall bear upon my knees, that I may also have children by her. And she gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to wife, and Jacob went in unto her. Now, this is the same thing we saw Sarah do with Hagar and Abraham. It is something we see in the Old Testament. It was a custom that was accepted in that day and in that part of the world, in the culture in which they lived. That does not mean that that's something she should have done, but she did it anyway. Now, God is going to use this, just like he's going to use the other things that Jacob and his family does. God's going to use it for their for his glory and their good, but that doesn't mean that this is something she should have done. In her envy, she gives Jacob her handmaiden and says, go make a baby, and because she's my handmaiden, when the baby is born, I'll adopt the baby. It will be my child. One of the interesting things I read by one of the commentators when I was studying in preparation for this week's Bible study is that he made the point that her sister already had four boys, and had Rachel and Leah had the right kind of relationship, Rachel could have doted on any one of those four boys or all four of those boys and loved on them and given them all the affection and been like a second mother to them had she wanted to. It wasn't so much that she wanted a child to love as she was just envious of her sister. That's why she's willing to accept a child, adopt a child by her handmaiden rather than pour out her love on those that were actually more closely related to her than the one she was going to choose to adopt and call her own. So again, her motives are not what they should be, but God's going to use this to give Jacob another son. Notice that it says in verse 4, she gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to wife, and Jacob went in unto her. This is not a loving marriage relationship. This is a business arrangement of sorts. It's certainly not what God intends marriage to be. Verse 5, and Bilhah conceived and bare Jacob a son. And Rachel said, God hath judged me and hath also heard my voice and hath given me a son. Therefore called she his name Dan. So these first four boys, those are all the sons of Leah. Now we have Dan. The name Dan literally means God is my judge. What she's saying here, when Bilhah had the baby and Rachel said, this is my child, and she adopted it or took the child without asking Bilhah's input, I'm sure, but she accepted the child as her own, claimed the child as her own, and in the name that she named him, by naming him God is my judge, she was trying to thumb her nose at Leah by saying, listen, look, God did give me a son. I asked God for a son, and God judged me worthy of a son. It's kind of ironic she should make that argument by naming the child that, because God's the one who had closed up her womb and not allowed her to have her own children as well. But that's why, that's the name, that's the meaning of the name Dan. God is my judge, and that was her way of saying, God hath judged me worthy to have a son, even though it was through her handmaiden. Verse 7, and Bilhah, Rachel's maid, conceived again and bare Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, with great wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister, and I have prevailed. And she called his name Naphtali. So Bilhah has another son. His name is Naphtali. And his name means exactly what the verse just said. It means to wrestle and overcome is the gist of the meaning of the name. Again, the way that she's choosing the names for these boys that she had her handmaid produce for her, the very names themselves show that the boys were just her way of getting back at her sister, trying to get even with her sister for having sons that she had not been able to have herself. I think it's perhaps, it's not only telling about Rachel, but put yourself in the situation of the two boys there. As they grow up and they know the meanings of their names, and they undoubtedly understand the situation between the mothers in the family, that would have to it would have to weigh perhaps on the boys a little bit as to, you know, well, we're just, you know, we're not, she doesn't necessarily love us, we're trophies. That's a good way of putting it, Alex. And so you will be able to see as we go through the sons of Jacob that not only these boys themselves will be affected by this rivalry between the two moms, Leah and Rachel, but even those who come after them, the descendants of each of these sons, and their interactions with each other for hundreds of years after this will have some bearing on, will be somewhat affected by what transpired all the way back to Leah and Rachel. So these are the two sons that were born to Bilhah, and of course Rachel called them her own. Verse number 9, when Leah saw that she had left bearing, she took Zilpah her maid and gave her Jacob to wife. So Leah says, well, listen, looks like I'm not going to have any more children, and Rachel gave Jacob her handmaiden. And she's claiming those two boys as her own sons. So I might as well give my handmaiden to Jacob. And if she has any children, why, I'll claim those as mine. So here's this rivalry, this competition going on. Verse 10, and Zilpah, Leah's maid, bare Jacob a son. And Leah said, a troop cometh. And she called his name Gad. So here's the next son of Jacob. His name is Gad. What a name, right? His name, as with the others, means exactly what it says. She said, a troop cometh, and called his name Gad. The name Gad, it has the connotation of two things, a troop or an invasion force and fortune or riches, prizes. What the name Gad literally means is the treasures taken by an invading force. That's what the name Gad literally means. I think that's kind of interesting because now we have Leah almost acting the same way as Rachel in the way she's just named this boy. I have a treasure now because I went out and took something. I went out and got something. So that I could claim the bounty, I could claim the treasure. Again, you have to feel for Gad, being named Gad, and knowing why he was named that at some point later in his life. Verse 12, and Zilpah, Leah's maid, bare Jacob a second son. And Leah said, "Happy am I, for the daughters will call me blessed." And she called his name Asher. So, here's another son. These are born to Zilpah. And Asher, it literally means blessed. And so Leah's saying, "I'm blessed. I have another son," even though it wasn't a son born to her. She claimed him. And so she had another son. So now how many sons does Jacob have at this point? Well, there's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 sons now in all that have been born to Jacob. Now, remember, these first 4, they had to have taken about 4 years worth of time to have 4 children. And so these other 4, they were born to the 2 handmaidens, but they could have been, all 4 of these could have been born within the same 2-year period, possibly, because this would have been a year, this would have been a year, but these could have been born in the same year, and these could have been born in the same year. We're still theoretically within a 6-year period here or thereabouts at this point. Look at verse 14. Verse 14, we have an interesting story that enters into the rivalry here, a little bit of a break in the narrative. It says, "And Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field and brought them unto his mother Leah." All right, now, let me stop here and say a couple of things about this. First of all, this is Reuben. He had to have been no more than about 5 or 6 years old at this point, so he's not Reuben we think of in the Bible as the grown man Reuben. He's a little boy Reuben. And he goes out in the field where the workers are working, and he finds some mandrakes. Well, what are mandrakes? Does anybody here know what mandrakes are? Elijah, you want to describe it for us a little bit?
A whole bunch of medieval mysticism about
He's right. Elijah's right. The mandrakes that you'll see if you pull up pictures of them online, it actually looks like a combination of 2 plants, 2 vegetables we're familiar with. Above ground, it looks almost like a tomato plant with little cherry tomatoes, but instead of being red, they're yellow. And then below the ground, as Elijah was describing, is a root that looks like almost like a sweet potato, but it's kind of a deformed potato. As he was describing, sometimes they look like the shape of an old man or something, all shriveled up and wrinkled. But both parts are edible, the little yellowish fruit on the top and the part that grows beneath the ground as well. As Elijah was saying, there are different groups of people in mystical religions and secret societies today, as well as the civilization in which they lived in that day and time. There was a lot of superstition that believed that mandrakes somehow made people more fertile, that they were more easily able to reproduce and have more children. And so here's this little boy, Reuben. He goes into the field. He finds some mandrakes there. Apparently, they are very appealing by the scent and to eat as well. So look what happens there in the rest of verse 14. "Then Rachel said to Leah, 'Give me, I pray thee, of thy son's mandrakes.'" Now, why do you suppose Rachel was wanting mandrakes that Leah's little boy had brought in? She was hoping to get a child. She was hoping, I think, that these mandrakes really produced the effect that they supposedly had, at least according to lore and superstition, that they would actually open her womb and cause her to have her own children. So she says, "Listen, give me thy son's mandrakes." And she said unto her, "Is it a small matter that thou hast taken my husband? And wouldest thou take away my son's mandrakes also?" So Leah replies back to Rachel. She says, "Listen, isn't it enough? You already have our husband. And he doesn't want anything to do with me. Isn't that enough without you wanting to take my little boy's mandrakes he just found in the field. That's kind of petty, isn't it? That's more or less what Leah is saying here. And Rachel said, therefore, or because of what you just said, he, that is Jacob, shall lie with thee tonight for thy son's mandrakes. Now, Rachel was Jacob's favorite. Apparently, on a regular basis, when it came the end of the day, it was Rachel's tent that he went into, and that's where he spent the night, night after night after night after night. That was his choice. That was his preference. But Rachel said, if you'll give me your son's mandrakes, I'll make sure that Jacob goes to your tent tonight instead of mine. So, what does Leah say? Verse 16, and Jacob came out of the field in the evening, and Leah went out to meet him and said, thou must come in unto me, for surely I have hired thee with my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. Rachel sold her night with Jacob, with her husband, to her sister for the boy's mandrakes. And Leah, on the other end, she bought a night with her own husband in exchange for the mandrakes, which she gave up. This is the story and the rivalry, the whole situation, it just is a little more than what you would normally read in the average story, for sure. It's a little more. What's that? It's not a pretty story. You're right, Brother Mike. Verse 17, and God hearkened unto Leah, and she conceived and bare Jacob the fifth son. Now, the first part of the verse says, God hearkened unto Leah. So we have to believe when it says he hearkened unto her that when she knew Jacob was going to be spending the night in her tent that night, she prayed and asked God to give her another child, that her bearing days would not be totally over with. Please give me another child. And you have to believe from what we're reading here that she must not be getting too many opportunities with Jacob to have any more children. Jacob wasn't giving her the opportunity to have others, I think is more the case than her actually not being physically able to bear children, is what it seems. And but God hearkened to her, gave her a fifth son. And Leah said, God hath given me my hire, because I have given my maiden to my husband. And she called his name Issachar. So here's the next son of Jacob. His name is Issachar. And his name literally means hired. That's what it means. She basically bought a night with her husband, and that's what she named her child. Poor Issachar. Boy, these boys, they're going to have some emotional problems to deal with later in life, I think, maybe some of them. Verse 19, and Leah conceived again and bare Jacob the sixth son. So apparently, after she had that one son, he went back at some point after the fifth child was born and was with her in her tent again, and she had another son. And Leah said, God hath endued me with a good dowry. Now will my husband dwell with me, because I have borne him six sons. And she called his name Zebulun. These also were sons of Leah. So his name means exactly what it says there as well. God hath, his name literally means a house of blessing, a blessed dwelling is what it means. She's saying, my husband will come stay with me in my tent now and love me more, because after all, I've given him six sons. Verse 21 says, and afterwards she, that is Leah, bare a daughter and called her name Dinah. Now, we don't see the names of too many daughters in the Bible, but in this case, we're given the name of Dinah. It could be, since she's the only daughter of Jacob that is listed anywhere in Scripture, she may have been his only daughter, and Perhaps that's the reason that we see this. It could also be because Dinah is going to be an important part of a story coming up. But we're introduced to the fact that Leah also has a daughter, and she's not a son, so I'm just going to put her in parentheses here, but the daughter, Dinah, is born to Leah as well. Verse 22, "And God remembered Rachel, and God hearkened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bare a son and said, God hath taken away my reproach. And she called his name Joseph and said, the Lord shall add to me another son." So finally, Rachel has a son all on her own because God opened her womb and allowed her to be able to. His name is Joseph. And his name, again, in keeping with all the others, means exactly what it says in verse 24. "The Lord shall add to me another son." His name literally means "the Lord will add grace to me." So she either knew directly from God or she was hoping that God was going to give her another son now that he had opened her womb. Now that she realized she could now have children, she was confident God was going to give her another son. Yes, sir? Oh, you're counting up here? All right, let's do that together. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So how many sons is Jacob going to have in all before we're finished? Who knows? 12. 12 sons Jacob will have in all. And so we've got 11 of the 12 sons, and we've got a daughter here in there. But we don't have the 12th son yet. That's still left to come, and it won't be in this chapter, by the way, so you'll have to wait on that. But look at verse 25. "And it came to pass, when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said unto Laban, send me away, that I may go into mine own place and to my own and to my country." So Jacob goes to Uncle Laban, and who's also his father-in-law at this point, and says, listen, I need to go back home. Now remember, he was only expecting to be there a short time anyway. He's now been there for how many years? 14 years. And remember, the part of the blessing that Isaac gave to him before he left was that he was supposed to be there in the land that God had promised to Abraham and to Isaac and now to Jacob. So if he wants all of that Abrahamic covenant blessing that God promised, he's got to be in the land. He's got to be back there where God sent Abram in the first place. And that's not where he's at now. Now he's in Haran, Padanaram, which is in Syria. Verse 26, he continues, "Give me my wives and my children, for whom I have served thee, and let me go. For thou knowest my service, which I have done thee." I feel like Jacob is coming with the right attitude, a right spirit. He says, give me my wives and my children. I think he was saying, listen, I don't have anything, but let me take my family and go home. Go back to where I'm from. I've got an inheritance waiting on me there. I need to go home. I think when he said, give me my wives and my children, he must have either been showing respect or knowing that if Laban didn't want him to go, Laban could have stopped him from going and taking his two daughters and all of his grandkids. I think Jacob was concerned. Uncle Laban wasn't going to let him go. We'll see that a little bit more. Verse 27, "And Laban said unto him, I pray thee, if I have found favor in thine eyes, tarry. For I have learned by experience that the Lord hath blessed me for thy sake." Laban says, listen, I want you to just stay. I have realized from watching that since you've been here watching over my flocks, God has blessed me because of you being here. He said, I want you to stay. He said, appoint me thy wages, and I will give it. Boy, that's a pretty good job interview. Tell me what you want, and that's what I'll pay. Tell me what I owe you, and that's what I'll pay to keep you. Boy, that's the kind of job interview everybody wants to be a part of, right? And he said unto him, thou knowest how I have served thee, and how thy cattle was with me. For it was little which thou hadst before I came, and it is now increased unto a multitude. And the Lord hath blessed thee since my coming. And now when shall I provide for mine own house also? Jacob says, listen, I need to start building up something for my own family. I've got these two wives and their handmaidens and all 12 of these children. I need to start building up something for my own self, not just working for somebody else for wages. Verse 31. And he said, what shall I give thee? And Jacob said, thou shalt not give me anything if thou wilt do this thing for me. I will again feed and keep thy flock. Hey, Uncle Laban's got to be thinking to himself. He just said he didn't want me to give him anything if I'll do something. What is it he's wanting me to do? Verse 32. Jacob says, I will pass through all thy flock today, removing from thence all the speckled and spotted cattle, and all the brown cattle among the sheep, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and of such shall be my hire. Jacob said, I'll go through all your flocks today, your sheep, your goats, your cattle, and any of them that are solid color, they'll be yours. I'll only take out the ones that you don't really like anyway, the ones that have spots or they're speckled or they have streaks on them. I'll take them out, the ones that have blemishes in their coloring, and those will be mine, and I'll work for the ones that are spotted, speckled, and striped. And all the solid white sheep will be yours, all the solid black goats will be yours. In other words, all of them that are solid color will be yours, because those were the ones that were prized by Laban and the ones that society, that culture valued the most. And they brought the best money. They were also the ones that were the most numerous, because most of the sheep were white. Most of them weren't white with black or brown speckled or spots or grizzle or whatever. Most of them were just a white sheep. And same with the cattle, same with the goats. And so I'm going to erase these things. So to Uncle Laban, this seemed like a really good deal. Because when he looked out across his flocks and his herds, he could tell just by looking, and he knew from years of experience being a husbandman himself, that most of them were going to be the ones that Jacob said he could keep. And Jacob was going to be getting the short end of the stick, it looked like. Yeah, the scraps. The ones that nobody really wanted anyway. So Uncle Laban's thinking, hey, he's offering to do this and stay on and work like he's been working, and I don't even have to pay him anything except give him those I don't really want anyway. This seems like not a bad deal. Verse 33. So shall my righteousness answer for me in time to come, when it shall come for my hire before thy face. Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the sheep, that shall be counted stolen with me. He said, if you find any that I'm not supposed to have, we'll both assume that it's stolen and I'll give it back to you. I'm not supposed to keep those. And Laban said, behold, I would it might be according to thy word. In other words, Laban said, sounds like a good deal. Verse 35, and he removed that day the he-goats that were ring-straight and spotted, and all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted, and everyone that had some white in it, and all the brown among the sheep, and gave them into the hand of his sons. Now, who is it that did this? It says he set 3 days' journey betwixt himself and Jacob. So this is Laban who's taking all of those that have been culled out that are going to belong to Jacob, and he's going to send them away with his sons to watch. When it says sons, it could also be meaning grandsons as well as sons. So in other words, all of those that were to be Jacob's, they're going to be separated from the rest of them that still belong to Laban, 3 days' journey between them. And Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. Why separate them 3 days' journey? So they couldn't mix together, mingle together, because sheep, as you know, have a tendency to just wander, to stray. And that's why you have the stories that you have in the Old Testament talking about sheep, that they'll put their head down and start eating as they're grazing, and they'll just keep wandering off, not looking at where they're going. So if you separate them 3 days' journey, there's no chance of them getting back mixed together, mingled together there. So here we have the flock. Now this is sheep, goats, and cattle, but you have some of it that's going to belong to Jacob. The rest of it still belongs to Uncle Laban. He's got by far the majority of all the animals still. Verse 37. And Jacob took him rods of green poplar and of the hazel and chestnut tree and peeled white streaks in them and made the white appear which was in the rods. Now that word peeled, P-I-L-L-E-D, is the same word as our peeled, as in you peeling an apple. In other words, he peeled some strips of bark off those rods, those branches. Verse 38, and he set the rods which he had peeled before the flocks in the gutters, that is the watering trough, in the watering troughs when the flocks came to drink, that they should conceive when they came to drink. Now, I'm going to stop at the end of verse 38. You have the watering troughs set up, and the ewes, the female sheep, would be brought to the watering troughs. And while they were drinking, the males, the rams, would take that as the opportunity to mate while the ewes were watering at the water troughs. So, what's that now? Brother Mike, I don't think he's making a fence with the rods. What he's doing with them is he's putting these rods where he's peeled some of the bark off them. He's putting them in the water trough with the water. Yes, sir. And we'll see why, I think, in a moment. Verse 39, and the flocks conceived before the rods and brought forth cattle, ring-straked, speckled, and spotted. Now, these are already gone. They're not there. They've already been separated. So we're talking about these right here that are all white sheep or all solid color goats. They're still producing some offspring that are still like these, just like they did before. Now the ones that they produce that are like these, why Jacob's going to get to keep them too. There are two things that we're going to see that are going on here. Number one is that Jacob is trying to make some of the livestock strong. And number two, he's trying to increase the percentage of those that are speckled, spotted, grizzled, gray, or striped. Because those are the ones that are supposed to go to him. Now, there are some Bible commentators who speculate that there was something in the types of trees that were put into the water troughs that somehow miraculously, either being in the water or setting them up behind the water troughs and the cattle looking at them, that it caused the livestock to produce striped livestock by looking at the striped sticks. I do not think that's what it's saying here. Let's read on, and then we'll come back to this in just a moment. Verse 40, and Jacob did separate the lambs, and set the faces of the flocks toward the ring straight, and all the brown in the flock of Laban. And he put his own flocks by themselves and put them not unto Laban's cattle. So Jacob kept his separate, just like they have been, but with Laban's, flocks began to have babies. Some of the babies still came out speckled, spotted, ring-straked, etc. And those would be Jacob's also. But Jacob made sure that it was the ones that looked like he was supposed to get that ended up getting mated with more than the solid color ones. He also wanted to strengthen the livestock that were the ones he was going to keep while weakening those that Laban was going to keep. Well, how did he do that? Well, I did a good amount of research, more than I ever intended to do, on these types of trees that it says he put into the trough. Rods, that is, branches of green poplar, hazel, and chestnut tree. There are some of the agricultural schools have actually done some experiments using these types of trees, at least the ones native to that part of the world. And what they did is literally what Jacob did. They tore, stripped, peeled the bark off, and put them in the water where the sheep were going to drink. Now, those trees that they've mentioned there have several natural herbal properties. I don't know if Jacob knew about this or didn't know about this. I strongly suspect he must have known about this. But those trees, number one, they have anti-inflammatories, so they fight off inflammation that might exist. They have some natural antibiotic properties that fight off sickness. They also are good for strengthening the reproductive system, organs in the body, making the animals healthier for reproduction. Now, the agricultural school test that I read about this week, where they tested this out, they took sheep that had none of those things in the water troughs, and then they took a group of sheep that drank from water troughs that had just a few of those branches of those different kinds of things in there. And then they took a group that had a bunch of those branches in their watering trough with the bark peeled off. Remember that in this part of the world, it is the temperatures can sometimes get fairly hot, maybe even hotter than we're used to here in Georgia. So think about on a hot summer day with these things sitting in the water troughs all day under the sun beating down. What he was doing is he was making an herbal tea of sorts for the cattle. And so when the cattle drank from those water troughs, the ones he let drink out of those water troughs the ones he was sending there were the speckled gray and spotted that had been born in Uncle Laban's flock. Those were the ones he was sending up there to drink out of those troughs that had the herbal tea. The rest of them got sent over to these troughs that were just drinking regular water. So his stock that were still part of Uncle Laban's big flock, they're growing strong. Those lambs that drank those in the agricultural experiment that was produced, those that drank the herbal tea water troughs produced more lambs, more multiple birth lambs, and the ones that were born had a higher live birth rate and a lower mortality rate among the lambs that were born. This is a modern-day agricultural test using the same thing to see what the results would be over those that just drank out of the regular water trough. So as far as making his stock strong, it certainly was working. Well, what did he do then to increase the percentage of animals that were being born speckled? Well, first of all, if his stock are stronger, they're going to naturally reproduce more. The ones that he's not letting drink out of the herbal tea, they're going to keep having babies, but they're not going to be as hardy as the others. Now, I want to do something that I have not seen anybody else do in any of the commentaries I've read or any of the videos that I've seen trying to see if somebody else attempted to explain this. My time is up, but if you give me another 5 to 10 minutes, I think you'll be glad that we did. I want to show you genetically what's going on here. You don't have to know anything about genetics to understand what I'm about to show you, because it's very simple. With sheep, for example, the color white is obviously the dominant gene. Most sheep come out solid white. That's just what the dominant gene is, at least in the sheep we're talking about in this, and probably most sheep anyway. If you have a sheep that has that's something other than solid white, that means he has a recessive gene to carry those dark colors in him as well. So he doesn't have just the dominant gene, he's got recessive genes. Now, most white sheep have that, I'm going to put a big W, that means the dominant white gene. I tell you what, instead of using W so it won't be confusing, I'm going to use just an X. They have a dominant gene, produces white sheep. But most of the time, they also are going to have, put that in the wrong place. Most of the time, they're also going to carry the recessive gene, even if they're solid white. Because just like us, they carry recessive genes even that don't show up on the outside. You and I carry a lot of recessive genes that we inherited, but only the dominant ones show in our physical characteristics. So if you have a sheep that has a dominant a big X, and a big X, well, obviously it's going to be a big X. It's going to look white. But even if you have a sheep that has a big X and a little X, a recessive gene with the dominant gene, the dominant one still takes precedent. It still overrides the recessive. He's still going to come out white. So most white sheep are not two dominant genes. Most sheep, just like most of us, have a dominant set of characteristics that you can see on the outside, but we still carry some of those recessive genes, eye color, height, weight, those kind of things too. So this is what most of the white sheep would be, a dominant white gene and still carrying some of the recessive genes. So here's most of Laban's flock. They have that dominant white gene, and then they have the little recessive gene with the other colors. So let's take the average sheep. Here's a daddy sheep with a dominant gene and a recessive gene. He's white. Here's the mama sheep, the ewe. She has a dominant white and probably carries a recessive gene too. So this is a grid. We're going to do it the same way you've done other kinds of grids and games you've played and stuff like that. It's just like Battleship. You come down and go across. So a big X and a big X. There's two big X's. What color is that sheep going to be? White. Let's go across. Here's a big X and a little X. What color is that sheep going to be? White. Okay. Let's go across. A little X and a big X. What color is that sheep going to be? White. Little X and a little X. What color is that sheep going to be? Yeah, speckled, spotted, ring straight, grizzled, something other than solid white. So normally, about a fourth, about 25% on average of that flock originally should have been the part that Jacob got. he probably started with about 25% of Laban's flock. But they moved those out, 3 days' journey away. So when these start reproducing, normally they should still produce about 25% the kind that Jacob's going to get, which, by the way, is not a bad commission. 25% commission, that's pretty good in most any field. But Jacob's not going to settle for that. Jacob's actually going to end up with more than that. Because here's what happens. One season passes by, one breeding season with this flock of Laban's, and all of those that come out looking like this, that are not solid white, they're the ones he's going to give that herbal tea out of the troughs. They're stronger, they're healthier, they have a higher fertility rate. So all of them that are not solid white are going to be two little X's. So he's going to put them up at the troughs when the rams are ready to mate. He's going to keep the solid white ewes over there. And he's going to bring the rams up to mate with the ones that are spotted, speckled, grizzled, and striped. Now, the rams might still be mostly white, mostly solid white rams, but the percentage is going to change. All right? These are the ones that he's intentionally segregating out here. So, little X's, two recessive genes. Here's the average white ram still that's going to mate with them. There's one dominant gene and one recessive. But now we're going to see the percentage is going to begin to change. Well, a little X and a big X still produces what color sheep? White. But a little X and a little X is going to be spotted. So that's one of Jacob's. A little X and big one, that's going to be white. But here's another little one and a little one. So now he's up to 50% of the offspring in the next season are going to become, they're going to be not white.
And you're going to have some eighth generation that's going to have the recessive green, the little X in there.
That's right. That's exactly right. Even when the white ones are reproducing with other white ones, you're right. There's still going to be a fourth of them that are going to be the recessive genes. So what's happening is the percentage of the recessive gene animals is the percentage is increasing, and they're also the ones that he's given the herbal tea, and so they're having more babies, more often having babies, having multiple birth babies, and their babies are living at a higher rate than the mortality rate of the solid white. And so eventually, his flock, even of the ones Laban kept, more and more of that flock is becoming spotted, striped, ring-straked, grizzled, and less of it is solid white. That's what's happening here in the story. Now, let me read the last few verses here to finish out the chapter. Verse 41, and it came to pass, whensoever the stronger cattle did conceive, that Jacob laid the rods before the eyes of the cattle in the gutters, that they might conceive among the rods. But when the cattle were feeble, he put them not in. So the feebler were Laban's, and the stronger Jacob's. And the man increased exceedingly, and had much cattle, and maidservants, and men servants, and camels, and asses. So Jacob, well, Uncle Laban thought he was getting the best end of the deal here. Turns out Jacob was a little smarter, craftier, deceitful. What's that?
Changed the rules.
His name does mean supplanter, if we could remember that. So he is supplanting Laban in ownership of his own flocks. the big flock that was Laban's, a smaller and smaller percentage of it is Laban's now. And bigger percentage of it now belongs to Jacob. That's going to create a controversy at some point between the two. Well, he actually has a better explanation than I don't know how it happened, but we'll read that in the next chapter. You definitely want to be here for that. He just did it a different way. Yeah. Anyway, it's a very interesting story in the next chapter too, so hope you'll be here for that. Lord, thank you for a chance to study your word together. Help us, I pray, Lord, to not only read and study your word for the history lesson and the story that's there, but Lord, help us to glean things from your word for our own lives. Help us to be men and women of honor, integrity, that have a good testimony for you. May others see you in our lives by the way we live, work, do business, and interact with others. But Lord, most of all, may we do what we do for your glory. I pray if we do that you'll take care of us as well. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.